Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news. First up, Phoenix Gen Auth, which is now built into the Phoenix framework, has a new PR that was merged, which looks really cool. So this one gives the generated auth code the ability to do magic links and a pseudo mode. So pseudo mode is when an authenticated user is attempting to take an action that is considered sensitive, like changing a password or changing an email or something like that, that at that point, they will be prompted again for the kind of pseudo mode to help prevent stolen sessions so they can't be hijacked if you were able to get somebody's cookie or something like that and be able to update the user's account without their control. So this is part of that hacker protection. You've seen this in other services a ton, you know, where you go to do some particular like in GitHub, you go into the settings and who can I add to this project? Oh, you have to re-authenticate or add in your one-time token or something like that just to help lock down those specific sensitive actions. So having that built in and magic links being built in, that's really great because I had previously added magic links to a project because it wasn't built in and that was what we wanted to use. And that required, you know, someone else had done it and put up a guide about how to do it. And I'm still, you know, having to kind of review this and really think through it from a security aspect. Did they miss anything? Is this solid? Can I trust this? So having something that's built in, I feel so much more confident about. So I like that.
So that's a mixed Phoenix Gen Auth, for what it's worth. It's a generator. You know, this is not built into Phoenix. This is just a generator that puts that code into your code base. So you're welcome to review and, you know, make adjustments as you see fit. But it is really nice to see, pseudo mode built in now and magic links built in now. I'll be honest, I didn't know that that was called pseudo mode.
I didn't either.
Yeah, very very Linuxy term. But other terms for it is like it's also called like step up or recent auth. It's basically just a mechanism on how recent your last auth was. And so they make it more recent. But yeah, very, very nice. And that's now merged into Phoenix main. So I'm sure that we'll see that in a upcoming release of Phoenix proper.
Yeah. One downside, I think, is because the Phoenix generators are generating code, which gets dumped into your project, and then you customize. So as this gets added, you don't automatically inherit anything, right? You have to regenerate a new project and see what does this do? And then you can compare that to maybe what you have. And then do an upgrade if that's you want to grab some of that functionality.
Yeah. Well, hey, well, then quick plug of one of the tools that I built. The ElixirStream.dev has a generator differ there, so you can feed in all the flags that you want. So you can select your version that you're on now or when you first generated your project from. And the version that you want to go to. Main is also included on that, by the way, so you don't have to wait for the tagged release. And you can see all those adjustments that they made from the generator and then turn off your brain and start copying and pasting and yellow out into prod and see how that goes. Just kidding. But good little tool. It's helped me out more than 10 times at this point. It's nice.
Today's Thinking Elixir show is brought to you by our friends at GigElixir, the premier development platform for Elixir and Phoenix projects. If you use the promo code THINKING during signup, you get 20% off the standard tier prices for an entire year. That's THINKING at GigElixir.com or visit GigElixir.com/THINKING to sign up today and get 20% off your first year.
All right. Hey, next up, there's a new library or app, I guess, out there called Hex MCP. Okay, so what's MCP? So MCP is a model context protocol. And so this whole package is a server that serves that protocol that provides real-time Hex package version information to AI tools like Cursor. And this service helps ensure that AI-assisted development uses the correct and most up-to-date package versions when adding dependencies to like Elixir projects. This first I heard about it, so I had to understand a little bit more. So in case you don't know what any of that means, like I didn't, here's the context. So this is really helpful for AI-centric tools, and in particular, this part I don't know, but Cursor. Cursor is an IDE for code editing. Cursor is a bit special in that it's very AI-centric, and you can configure Cursor to point to these MCE servers to provide more helpful suggestions. So Hex is one of those package registries out there, but there's other ones, obviously, like NPM and GEMS and stuff. So there's other MCP servers out there as well that Cursor can take advantage of. This now gives you the Hex version of that, which is pretty nice. The thing I don't know if Cursor is the only one out there or if there are other editors picking up on this pattern. So if there are other editors picking up on this pattern, well, then cool. Go check out that configuration and go check out Hex MCP. We'll have a link in the show notes. Very cool to see that. Kind of intersects with a little bit of like previous news we heard about. You might be familiar with robots.txt. Kind of an old school way of informing like the Google crawler on what not to crawl. So you'd say, don't crawl my admin routes, for example, and it wouldn't. So you don't want those showing up in Google results, right? And so an LLM specific one is LLM.txt. Now I'm unaware if this is an official standard or just becoming a standard or what, but the LLM.txt file is meant to provide the same kind of idea here, where it's a normalized, for the purpose of LLMs crawling your site, normalized data set of what your site provides and a little bit more tuned to their consumption so they can get it more correct. MCE servers seems to intersect with this, you know, but it's specific to development IDs, you know, because it's a special purpose, I guess. So anyway, I have more to learn there. Maybe if you know more, you can post at me at Blue Sky. I'd happy to talk about it and learn more. But that's very interesting and very cool. You know, Elixir is not absent from the AI community at all. So I'm very happy to see that this is now available.
And next up, Michael Lubis of Paraxial.io shared a new blog post on the 11 best practices for Elixir and Phoenix applications. So these best practices are security focused. So I just wanted to go through his list. And we're just hitting the high points. Now, I would encourage you to go check out the blog post because each one of these little points has a whole explanation that goes along with it to help you understand it. Just to cover it, number one, maintain an inventory of all your public-facing applications, right? That just makes sense. Know what you have actually that's being publicly hosted. There's so many cases where some enterprise was breached because some little service was running in like a closet and nobody knew was there, but it was on the network and not being patched, right? So yeah, know what you have. Run static analysis scans with Sobolo regularly in CI or CD, if possible. Detect vulnerable dependencies with Mix Audit. And he suggests not using Dependabot, but use Mix Audit instead. And check the ports and SSH settings of your web server. Ensure your database server is not exposed to the public internet. How many breaches have there been just because of that? Like S3 buckets were set to public instead of private, or a Mongo database was just public. Make sure you're not doing that. Number six, check your server-side request forgery, SSRF, and use safe URL library if needed. Number seven, be wary of using ImageMagick, GhostScript, and FFmpeg on user uploads. These are parsers, and if you're letting people throw malicious content, they could find a vulnerability and cause code to be executed. So just be aware of that. Number eight, rate limiting on authentication and payment endpoints. Yeah, don't let people just hammer and throw, you know, a whole database of username and passwords that have been leaked from somewhere else. Just don't let them just hammer on your website and find out if can we get in. So rate limiting on those things. Number nine, scan your code base for secrets. Number 10, check for sequential IDs and access control violations. That one's a fun one, you know, where you can just user ID number one, user, you know, /1. And if I just go and change it to 2, will it work? Oh, it does. Oh, wow.
Also important for like spas, you know, as well. Mm. If you serve a Phoenix backend and a spa front end, like your spa probably has like the user ID somewhere and it might cache that and act upon that, right? So it's client side. So people can just switch it out, make sure that
can't trust it.
Yeah. Make sure that's double checked when the request comes in.
Yep. And the last one, number 11 was check for mass assignments in Ecto. You have to distrust everything that comes from the client, even if it's your own, you know, you expect this is my own spa front end running. I trust that it's going to make correct calls. It's like, well, it can be manipulated. If someone says, oh, I just want to see when I'm changing my profile color, can I set is admin true? and send that to the back end. And does that just get mass assignment set? You know, things like that can happen.
I think that's generally protected by like change sets. But yes. I guess the point there is that you don't want one change set to rule them all and like have everything go there. You want specific change sets for the given access control that you want. Yeah,
absolutely. So just check out the blog post because each of those items has more coverage on his blog. And you should trust him over me in how you can best handle those things. Personal experience, having recently gone through another OWASP training, all of these items are important to understand, right? These are ways that businesses are being breached or are being taken advantage of. And so, hey, we don't want that to happen to our products or projects or teams or companies. So that's our responsibility to learn about these things.
All right. Next up, the Phoenix LiveView component library DAISY UI was updated to 0.70 and released. So DAISY UI, if you haven't heard of it, is, well, it's a pre-styled component library. Phoenix does like kind of ship with core components right now and by default using Tailwind. Not that that's terrible. DAISY actually might be using Tailwind. I haven't checked. It doesn't matter. But DAISY UI is its own styled, you know, set of components, and it's ready for Phoenix LiveView. So the idea here is that you would replace, you know, Phoenix default core components with these freestyle DAISY UI components, and it has over 30 of them built in. The cool part about DAISY is that it's, well, other than easy, it also has a live storybook. What that means, if in case you don't remember what that is storybooks are a way to show the design system that you might have. So that way you can kind of browse as if you're looking at a picture book, you know, you can browse all of your pre-styled components and select, you know, from your library or add new components. So DAISY UI being all pre-styled and kind of, you know, developed for you has a style book for you to go check out. So we have a link to that. So you can see whether or not it vibes with what you want. So that's pretty nice. It's been a little bit since we talked about it. Glad to see that the project has had a number of updates. It's got a lot of updates. It's not stale. You know, anything that's got to do with UI updates, you know, really can't afford to be stale. There's lots of changes and, you know, preferences kind of change over time and how things should be interacted with. So anyway, if you haven't checked out DAISY UI in a while, now's a good time to go revisit it.
And next up, previously we talked about the Phoenix LiveView debugging package. So I just wanted to revisit that. So it's called Live Debugger and it's put out by Software Mansion. The version that I used is, it's an RC. It's not even officially published to Hex. You have to pull it from their GitHub. But I just have to tell you, this is good. You want this. So what was going on is I thought, oh, this is the perfect time for me to try something. I was working with a LiveView, and the LiveView was fairly complex state. The state was being serialized into the URL so that if the user hits refresh or browses away and comes back, that the state remains, right? It's able to reload all of its state. So I was wanting to debug, what is the state that's going on right now in this live view? And having this tool made it instantly easy. One of the things I love is you run it side by side, right? It's like I got my two browser windows side by side and I can just see list of all of my current open live views and click the one I want to join to. And then I'm like looking at it. And as I make changes, it's getting updated and I'm seeing, oh, here's the new state. Oh, that answers my question. That's exactly what I needed to see. It was instantly answered. And I was like, man, this is great. We had mentioned it before, but I just want to make sure that you are aware that this is really cool. And I think that something like this will become standard for a lot of projects. And this is super early too. When you're looking at this tool and it doesn't do what you want, you're like, oh, it could do this too. That would be really cool if it could do this. Now is the time, I think, to get involved with this because it's so early. There's a lot of things that could be done to improve it, but what they have done is already so valuable. So check it out if you haven't played with it yet.
I did not realize that it would actually list your current sessions. So you don't have to like always click from like your current one. You could just open it up and go find anyone's, you know?
Yeah. And so like, this is for dev only, right? You don't run this in production, right? It's like set up to be a dev only thing. But like, if you hit refresh in your browser on your live view, it's going to kill that live view process and start a new one. Then you can just select it from your list on the side and rejoin up to it. So
All right, next up, Postgres, often the database of choice for Phoenix applications, which is why I'm talking about it. Postgres gains self-eliminating self-joins. Self-join eliminate. I think that's the pattern there. If you don't know what that means, join the club. From what I can tell, this is a pretty typical optimization trick that a lot of databases use. Postgres is just a little bit late to the party, which is why it's notable. Not that it's late, but that it now has it. I've never considered Postgres to be slow, but the optimizer is essential in making all these little tips and tricks kind of just work invisibly. Mm-hmm. So the idea here, it's an optimization, first of all, so it's not something that you need to be cognizant of. But the idea here is that it is less efficient to literally join a table to itself on a unique key, you know, because there's other, you know, like most queries, there's probably like three ways to write it. And so the optimization is essentially taking that self join and converting it into like conditions, which could leverage indexes or, you know, things like that to essentially just perform a little faster. If you want to learn more about that, there's a good post on Phoronix that goes into detail into it. And then there's always the Postgres mailing list, which is always full of little interesting kernels and questions and stuff. I often find myself landing at the mailing list when I'm searching for obscure issues that I run into. But yeah, that's coming to Postgres, probably landing in or releasing in Postgres 18. So I think 17 is the most recent version now. So we'll look forward to this in Postgres 18.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, when I was looking at that was seeing, you know, you're hearing this and you're saying, well, I don't do that. I don't write those kind of queries. And what it was saying is that a lot of ORMs that people are using in other frameworks, those will generate these types of queries.
So it's right.
Not a user designing the query this way, but the tool that they're using ends up generating it. So it could cause performance issues. And it didn't name specific ORMs. I don't think Ecto is at risk for that at all. So I don't know that it would directly be an issue for us in the Elixir community, but it's cool. Like, so they would continually have people requesting this because their ORM was doing this and it was less efficient. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So here's an example. If you really want to know more, it's like, so select from my table where condition in, and now I have a subquery where it's selecting from the same kind of table. And this, so that's one, or a similar ones where select star from the table where exists, and then you have the subquery, that kind of thing. And so what it kind of converts into is just a more efficient like condition, I guess. That's the idea. I'm sure I got some of the finer details wrong there. So don't take me at my word. Go take the article at its word. Go check that out. But that's the good news is that, well, much like any in all Postgres releases, it's just always faster, better, stronger. You know, this is another one of those features that makes it better.
Nice. And next up, another Elixir adjacent conference. We've talked about this in the past, Lambda Days. They are gearing up for tickets to go on sale. The conference is June 12th and 13th in Krakow, Poland. So Lambda Days, David, you and I, we attended it virtually once.
Yeah.
And so I got a sense for what it's really about. So this may not apply to everyone here, but it's very much more academic focused. But it's all about functional programming, right? So you're going to have talks about Elm and Scala and Lisp and F Sharp and other things. And this year, I didn't notice any Elixir or Erlang topics, but they have had them in the past. But, you know, plenty of people in our community are very much into functional languages. And some people are very much more interested into the academic aspect of that. So I just want to let you know that that was there. And it is a very cool conference. Really make you think about things too.
Yeah. All right. And also in the Elixir world, there is another conference called Alchemy Conf. It is coming up in Braga, Portugal. I might be finding myself in Portugal there. I really want to go visit now. But it's in Braga, Portugal, and it's happening on April the 2nd through the 3rd. We have a discount code. So yeah. if you made it to the end of this news segment, congrats. And you want to go to Braga, Portugal to go to Alchemy Conf. The discount code is ThinkingElixir, all caps. Caps may not matter, but try it. All caps, 10% off of the tickets. So we have a link to the tickets. Braga, Portugal is like what, the Florida of Europe, but maybe less crazy. Always good weather. That's the idea. And that's alchemyconf.com. So you can find out more info about what's going on there. And again, that's on April 2nd to the 3rd in Braga, Portugal.
So check out the show notes because we have the discount code and the links where you can buy the tickets and also the Gig Elixir promo code where you can get the 20% off your first year. So check out the show notes for that. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us next time on Thinking Elixir.